thought for today. Even little people have rights of privacy. Even little people have rights of privacy. Even little people have rights of privacy. What are these little people? Little people are children, you and I, dogs and cats. Everyone has a right for privacy. I looked up the word privacy and thought it was very interesting what I came up with. Privacy, aloneness, solitude, detachment, being separate. Privacy, retreat, a hiding place, a hideaway, a den, a lair, the cloister, the ashram, the hermitage, a cell, an ivory tower. Privacy, seclusion, retirement, isolation. Privacy, secrecy, incognito, anonymity. Interesting ideas for privacy, right? We don't usually think of privacy quite in all those terms, but according to the thesaurus, that's references to privacy. Now, how does this work with little children? We think of little children as being people that we should watch out for, watch over, care for, make sure that they're always doing the right thing, and make sure that they're always behaving, make sure that they're always being good little children, and they're always doing the things that they should. Because sometimes we think little children do things that they shouldn't do. And why do we think little children do things they shouldn't do? Because when we were little children, we did things that we shouldn't do. If we didn't expect little children to do things they shouldn't do, they wouldn't do things they shouldn't do. If we wouldn't expect little children to do things they shouldn't do, they wouldn't do things they shouldn't do. What shouldn't a little child do? Well, the common phrase is, when the children are playing and having fun, they're noisy. When children are quiet, go and see what they're doing. They're probably into something which is a problem. And this oftentimes is true. The children are active in something that is not to your liking. Little girls go into their mother's dressing room, and they go to the table and see all of her goodies there, and they sit at the table, and they see their mother putting on rouge and lipstick and eye makeup, eyeshadow and things, and so they're trying it. And of course, they look like wild Indians by the time they're done, because they never seem to get the lipstick to go where it's supposed to go. And the rouge seems to make them look very wild. And the eye makeup, they don't want to get too close to their eyes, so they make it high above, and they look very fascinating. But are they doing something wrong? If their mothers are doing it, why do the mothers think that they're doing it wrong? Because that's mothers. They're not supposed to be playing with mother's toys. And essentially, that's what it is, mother's toys. However, when mother says, now you bring your toys in here and I'll play with mine and you play with yours, then there is sort of a differentiation made. But the mother usually says, stay away from my dressing table, stay away from my makeup table, stay away from my things. And that's never a thing to tell anybody. You never tell anyone to stay away from things. You say, the street is where the cars play. And you play on the lawn. Now, one day, you'll be big, and you can drive a car, and you'll be out there driving in the street where the cars play. Right now, you want to play in here where it's good for you to play, and the cars aren't going to have to worry about little boys or little girls driving their tricycle out into the street, because the tricycle belongs on the sidewalk. And that's the fun place for it to be. So, when a parent takes that point of view with the children feel that they're what? They have rights of privacy. Privacy? What's privacy got to do with riding your bike on the street or riding your bike on the sidewalk? It's your private place to ride your bike on the sidewalk. It's a car's private place to ride their bike, their car on the street. Now, you don't think of it usually in that respect. But when you start thinking of it in that respect, what do you come up with? You come up with the idea that everything is placed in juxtaposition to what it is. It's not a matter that you can't do this or you can't do that. It's a matter of what can you do? And why can you do it? You see, privacy is not a matter of secrecy or a matter of something that is hidden or unrevealed. It's a matter of this is something that belongs to you. The sidewalk belongs to you. That's where you play. And it also belongs to other people who walk along there, or dogs and cats who run along the sidewalk. The sidewalk also belongs to other children. The sidewalk belongs to the baby buggy, the scooter. The sidewalk belongs to many things, but it belongs to you too. See, everyone has a right to use the sidewalk. They don't put a concrete sidewalk in along the street for just one person. They put it in so that everyone can play there who likes to play the games that are played on the sidewalk. So, we find that when we treat little children with the respect that we would treat an adult, we get the response from little children that we would get from an adult. The little children understand these things. They understand as we tell them that these are the rules of the game. Now, you want to play with your brother? Your brother is playing a game of Monopoly. I want the money. I want to be the banker. But you don't know how to count yet. And until you learn how to count, you can't be the banker. And once you learn how to count, then you can be the banker. But you also have to realize that there are rules in being the banker. Now, you can't give the money from the bank to just anybody. You can only give it to the people who have a right to have it. If you're going to sell Park Place, then you can get money from the bank from Park Place or from someone who wants to buy Park Place from you. You can turn your property into the bank, or you can buy your property out of the bank. You can do many ways and many things. But you see, there are rules of the game. And until you understand all these very technical rules of the game, then you can't very well play the game. So here we have a little 3-year-old, a little 4-year-old wanting to play Monopoly. And they don't know how. They just like to take the money and say, oh, look at all the money I got. Oh, look at this, look at this. Now, the rest of children know that that youngster isn't going to play the game the way the rules are. And so the rest of the kids just don't pay any attention to the youngster. They just go on playing their game, and if the youngster wants to go in there and crawl in there, that's just fine. If he wants to do anything, that's just fine. If he messes up their pieces on the game, they just put them back the way they think they might have been, and they go on with the game. You see, youngsters too have a right to privacy in growing up. They have a right to finding themselves as they're playing this game. In the Arnaldi family, Melissa is a little 3-year-old girl, and she's just a wise little cracker. But the kids would be playing soccer in the backyard, and they'd be kicking the ball back and forth with total abandon. And Melissa would walk out there and be untouched by the ball. Now, did the kids purposely not kick the ball at her? Yes. They purposely kicked the ball where they wanted the ball to go. If she walked in the way, it did not hit her because that was not her choice. But they kicked the ball where they wanted to go. They didn't kick the ball to Miss Melissa. If they had kicked the ball to Miss Melissa, they would have hit Melissa. Because anytime we have any type of aim of anything that we're doing against or for, we usually accomplish what we are doing. If we're thinking about hitting something, we often hit it. If we're thinking about not hitting something, we often hit it. It's just the way the principle seems to work. The law of cause and effect does not know not. It does not know no. The law of cause and effect only knows to do, and it puts a positive on anything that is said, even if it is said not to do it. And so you have to be very careful how you state things. Well, now let's look at children again, little people, and their right to privacy. What does it mean that they have a right to privacy? Little children spend the majority of their early years in private. They're sitting in their own little world. They're in their crib, their bassinet. They're in their bed. They're in their playpen. They're under a controlled situation, but they're in private. To them, there's nobody else around. They're playing with their toe or their thumb, and they're playing with their toys. Now, we've had a perfect illustration of that recently. We purchased a little Maltese dog. And this little Maltese dog does not expect to get much larger than it is, maybe a couple inches, but not much more than that. And this little Maltese dog is a very special creature. He's put in his house. He's 9 weeks old now, almost 10, and he's put in his house, and he goes to sleep, or he plays gently. He will go out in the backyard in the grass, and he will run up and down the backyard as though he's on some sort of racetrack. And he'll roll over in the grass, and he'll jump up, and he will go after unseen things, totally amusing himself in the privacy of his own world. We have no idea what he's doing. We know he's having fun, but we have no idea who he's playing with, who his unseen partners are, who the guests are at his party. We have no idea, but he's having a wonderful time. And then he comes in and he sees the other dogs and he chases the other dogs just as though he's as big as they are. And he jumps up on them and they trounce on him, and he rolls over on his back and says, "Hey, I'm vulnerable. Kill me if you want, or love me." And they love him. They wouldn't think of hurting him when he rolls over on his back in such submission. Now, he's really not being submissive. Do you understand that? He's in his private world, and he knows the rules of his private world. What is the best way for an animal not to be caught by another animal? Play dead. You've heard that phrase. The animal plays dead, and the other animals don't care for it. They don't want anything to do with a dead animal. They want to chase it and kill it themselves and eat it, but they don't want to take a dead animal. There are carrions and other types of birds and creatures that like taking something that's already been killed by something else, but most of the animals don't do that. Most of the animals we call healthy animals are not carrion. They do not eat something that has already been killed. Now, you say, well, a dog eats meat that we give it. That's totally different. Totally different. That is food. That is not a kill. Little people, animals, children, they live in their own private world, and they're anonymous. They're totally incognito. They don't even know that you know that they're there, because they think you don't know they're there. The little girl will go up behind her mommy and say, "Mommy, where do you think I am?" And mommy says, "I don't know where you can be. Where is Jeannie? Where is Jeannie?" Mommy plays the game. Jeannie's right behind mommy. And Jeannie is 100% confident that she is perfectly hidden. You know? She is confident. And, that's right, too. She puts her hands in front of her eyes and says, "You can't see me," just because she can't see herself now. You see, these are beautiful games that little people play. And they're games of the purest of innocence. They're games of the purest of innocence. When you call another person innocent, what you are calling that person is not naive, not bad in any way. You are calling them innocent. You are calling them ingenuous. You're calling them so pure and so beautiful that they live the very essence of what we would all like to live. Wouldn't you like to put your hand in front of your eyes and say, "You can't see me"? Wouldn't you like to do that? Wouldn't that be fun? To become invisible just by putting your hands over your eyes? Wouldn't it be fun to be invisible just by closing your eyes? Ha, 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 nobody can see me, you know? And you see them, but you play along. If you have any sensitivity about you at all, you play along. And you say, "I wonder where they could have gone," you know? And it's a wonderful game to play. Burl Ives was a very wonderful singer, guitarist. I always admired the fellow. Loved every movie he was in. He did the Uncle Remus bit and all that other sort of stuff. And he had the most gentle, loving, sensitive, caring nature about him. Everyone just felt good when Burl Ives went on to perform. He had his guitar, and he would sing. And he had his repertoire, which was just tremendous. But it was all beautiful songs. Songs of the privacy of childhood. Songs of the innocence of adults. Songs of the love of all the land and all the people. He was just a man of magic. I will have to get something of his and play it sometime. But he was a glorious being. I believe he played in the movie, not Mr. Roberts, but something similar to that, where maybe it was Mr. Roberts. And this guy was going to become a doctor as soon as the war was over and he could go back. Well, this captain, who was terrible, who was Burl Ives, who was just terrible and a miserable old guy, just a terrible, terrible old guy, he and Mr. Roberts were put in a lifeboat somehow. Well, they went to an island, and a big storm came up, and the ship had to leave and so forth. And so they were alone on this island. And the captain had appendicitis, and they had to take the appendix out. So this guy didn't know anything about it. He read all the books, but he'd never done anything. So then he talked back on the ship. And the doctor on the ship says, "Well, come on now, you can do this." "But I have no tools, I have nothing." He says, "Don't you have a pen knife, or don't you have a pocket knife or something, you know?" "Yeah, but just a little one." "Well, dig in there." "But it'll hurt him, you know." "Well," and the captain never drank. Never, never drank. And so they started pouring whiskey down him to get him inebriated so he was insensitive. And they got him insensitive, and the captain became very bawdy, very naughty. He was saying all sorts of things that he as the captain and he as a very proper man would never say. And so Mr. Roberts didn't really care anything about that. He wanted to take care of that appendix. And, "Well, he's singing now. He's happy now." "Well, that's the time. Now get everyone to hold him still and take the knife and do this. Now do this. Now reach inside there and pull out that appendix. Now do this and do this." And do, you know, he gave him all the instructions. And here this Mr. Roberts is working on it, and he's doing everything. "Okay, now sew him up." "With what?" "So find something, you know." And so they found something to sew him up. And so the captain was very, very happy. He didn't really know what was going on. And so later they did get back to the ship. And it healed fine, and the captain lived. And the captain says, "What did I say to you when I was drunk?" And Mr. Roberts said, "Why, nothing, sir." You know, nothing. He played the game. Although the captain told him all of his hidden secrets of how he really was a gentleman. He had a wife and children at home, and he couldn't be with them, and that made him very unhappy, and so on and so forth. But he was really a very, very innocent and loving man, but he had to play the tough captain role, he thought. Well, when they got back on ship, everybody said, "Why didn't you knife him? Why didn't you put him to death? Why didn't you fix his appendix? Why didn't you leave him die, you know?" And Mr. Roberts said, "Well, he's okay." "Well, what did he say? What did he do?" "Well, you know, nothing." "How did he act?" "Nothing." "What sort of guy was he?" "Nothing." Now, the captain didn't know that Mr. Roberts was standing up for him so well. And he still picked on Mr. Roberts. And so the whole crew of the ship thought, "Yep, he's the same old good-for-nothing guy." But, you see, it's playing the game. We can know a lot of very important things as adults, but we have to pretend that we don't know them. When we're working with children, we have to allow them their privacy. And one of the privacies of childhood is the Easter Bunny. Another privacy of childhood is Santa Claus. Another privacy of childhood is the Tooth Fairy. And many others of these natures. And when we want to take them away from the children and ourselves, because the world is a hard, rough place out there, what we're doing is we're taking away all the fun from them. We're taking away all the joy out of their life. And we're taking it away from ourselves. But when we can play the game, when I was editor of the Atwater Signal in Atwater, California, I had to cover the Easter egg hunt in the park. You know, big deal. But we were a weekly newspaper. We covered those important events. And I took my little boy out there. He was, what was he, 3 or 4 or something like that. And so here we were looking in the field for the Easter eggs, along with all the other boys and girls from the neighborhood, from the whole area. We had a lot of Portuguese kids there, a lot of Catholic kids, because that was a predominantly Catholic community. But there were Methodists and Lutherans and Episcopalians and everything else under the sun in minute proportions. And I knew where all the eggs were. I could virtually see them from my high vantage point. But the little people down there, they couldn't see them. They had to be almost on top of them before they would find the eggs. And I had to make myself shut up, especially with my own son, because I could have him pick up all the eggs, and he would win the contest of picking up the most eggs. But it wasn't the winning of the contest. You see, that was an adult thing, winning contest. For them, it was finding the eggs that the Easter Bunny had laid there, that the Easter Bunny had taken chocolate bunnies and put them out there for them. Chocolate eggs and boiled eggs and colored eggs. Some were not boiled. And it was very fascinating. We were at another Easter egg hunt, which was in Columbus, Ohio. And at this Easter egg hunt, I was the editor of the 5 weekly newspapers in the area there. And so we went out to this Easter egg hunt. And part of the Easter egg hunt was for the adults to take fresh eggs and give it to the other person. And with each giving, you had to walk back a step. And pretty soon you get back 30 steps. And you got to catch that egg as it comes down, you know, so it doesn't crash. And some were very, very good. I got out maybe three-quarters of the way back. But some guys went all the way back. Well, now, it wasn't the catching of the egg. Everyone was not interested in the catching of the egg. They would say, "Woo, ha, woo," and then splat, "Ha, ha, ha." That was the joy, when it was splat all over you with that egg, you know, because you caught it wrong, splish. And the ones who are the winners, nobody paid any attention to them because they had gotten miles apart from each other, throwing the egg back and forth, but they were just exquisite. The adults appreciated them, but the kids, so what, you know, big deal. But it's when they crash, it's when that egg smashes open, when they didn't make the catch, then the kids says, that's the way I would do too, you know. But it was a fun of it. It was a joy of it. And we can never really know what the privacy of a child's world is, because we think in adult terms. We think in winning terms. We think that the game has to be played by the rules. And the little people don't necessarily know the rules yet. But they're learning. And they have to have the feeling of joy while they're learning. And so when we can teach the little people how it is to play the game by our example, and how to play the game with love and not be angry when the egg splats on us and makes a mess of us for the whole day and we stink of egg, you know, and the party is only beginning, you know. So you just sort of have to go along with it. And every time one of the little children would come up to someone who missed the egg and it splatted on them, they'd say, "Woo!" You know. And the people who caught the eggs and were successful, they were like nothing. You see, the game is the game. And when we understand the privacy of children, we'll understand the privacy of ourselves. And instead of running away from our own privacy, of being ourselves and having fun, of shouting to the mountains and saying, "I like me, I like me, I like me," and have the whole mountains ring back, "I like me, I like me, I like me," that the children love. Let's go to the mountains and sing to the mountains. Oh, goody! Let's go up to the mountains and pray. What's that all about? Let's go tell God what we think of him. "God, I love you!" Oh, he's in here. I didn't have to shout so loud. Oh, shout all you want? Okay. God says, "Shout all you want." So, I'm shouting all I want. Just remember, even little people have rights of privacy. And the privacy is the opportunity to find themselves and have fun without all the rules of society, without all the rules of the world. Not that the rules are right or wrong, but that they enjoy the act of being themselves. They don't have to be you. They don't have to be me. Just be themselves and have fun. That's what life's all about. I love you.